Welcome to a Juno Afternoon on Monday, May 11th, 2015. I'm your host, Scott Burton. On today's show, KJ Metcalf will be here to talk about the upcoming Friends of Admiralty cruise to Seymour Canal. We'll learn about an upcoming benefit for Sigla. We'll talk with the actor and aerial artist, Sylvia Kwan, about a special fundraiser for the Rock Dump. And we'll get a preview of Bill Leedy's presentation for the Juno World Affairs Council on Arresting Climate Change. Those interviews, National Native News, Writer's Almanac, Bird Note Music, and more right here on a Juno afternoon. Currently 59 degrees at the Juno Airport.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Just a few weeks before the King Salmon Run begins in earnest in southwest Alaska, tribal leaders came together to create the Kuskokwim River Intertribal Fisheries Commission. The group is working to create a system in which tribes have a direct management role in the river's salmon. KYUK's Ben Matheson has more.
Tribal delegates from the headwaters to the mouth of the river came together in what organizers call an historic first gathering. Close to 30 tribes were represented.
It's a great day for all of us in the Kuskokwim River.
Mike Williams of Akyak was voted the commission's first chairman. The vision is for tribes to take on responsibility with the state and federal governments for managing the river's fish, the mainstay of livelihood for the Yupik people. What the next steps of co-management look like is still in the works. For 2015, the commission will seek extensive tribal consultation and involvement. William says the commission selected a small team to meet with managers at least once a week.
They're going to be working with these three individuals, and this is the first time, so we're excited. I think in terms of achieving meaningful input, you know, I'm pretty excited about that.
In a separate but related track, what's called a co-management demonstration project from the Department of the Interior is in the works for next summer. That will likely come in the form of a federal committee, including tribal members and other rural residents spanning the 700-mile river. The commission comes as the river suffered years of decline, and last year saw the lowest subsistence take on record of 12,000 king salmon. Another below-average year is expected. Jonathan Samuelson, representing Georgetown, captured the commission's challenge in bringing together voices. He was raised both downriver and upriver.
People are going to have different opinions, we're going to have different views, but that does not mean that we can't come out of it as a united voice.
The year's first salmon fishing restrictions go into place beginning May 21st. I'm Ben Matheson in Bethel, Alaska.
A nonprofit group is refining its focus in assisting both animals and children in need. The Lakota Animal Care Project returned to the Pine Ridge Reservation last week in South Dakota. The first spay and neuter clinic of the year took place in the village of Wombly. Jim Kent has more on efforts to get kids involved with animal care.
Virginia Ravindahl founded the Lakota Animal Care Project in 2007 because there were no veterinary services on the 2-million-acre Pine Ridge Reservation. There still aren't any vet services other than those provided at clinics the mostly volunteer group sponsors throughout the year. One essential aspect of the program has been to get Lakota kids involved with needy animals on the reservation in order to teach them responsibility. But the focus of helping Lakota children is being refined, says Ravindahl, as a result of the number of increased youth suicides on Pine Ridge.
When any one of us knows that we have a friend, whether that be a person friend or an animal friend, that gives us a good reason to live. And another good reason to live is if another living being depends upon us for food and water, for basic health care, for friendship, for love.
The plan is to have one Lakota child accept sponsorship for one animal through the Shunka Scout program and be responsible for it through the child's school years. Shunka is the Lakota word for dog. As respect for and from that animal grows, Ravindahl hopes each child will learn to have respect for themselves and for life. For National Native News, I'm Jim Kent.
And I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kiwanis Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation. And by the law firm of Sanosky, Chambers, Saxe, Miller & Munson, advocating Native American interests throughout the United States, with offices in New Mexico, California, Alaska, and Washington, D.C. The Convention and Tourism Department of the Albuquerque Hispano Chamber of Commerce provides convention and event planning services for Native American organizations. Information at ahcnm.org. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
You're listening to a Juneau Afternoon here on Monday, May 11th, 2015. Scott Burton, your host here. It's about 6 minutes after the hour. And I've been joined in the studio now by the president of the Friends of Admiralty Group, Mr. K.J. Metcalf. Welcome, K.J.
Thank you, Scott. And great to be here.
Yeah, thanks for coming in out of this beautiful, sunny afternoon to tell us about your cruise. So you're going to be heading down to Seymour Canal soon.
That's right. On May 23rd, it's going to be, I think, a wonderful cruise. We've got some great resource people aboard. It starts at 8:30 in the morning from Staterboat Harbor in Auk Bay, and we're going to go down to Brothers Island and up into the lower end of Seymour Canal. And Brothers Island was one of many fox farms at one time, and there's a lot of cultural history from early Tlingit. In fact, I was adopted into the killer whale clan, and one of our main stories is from that area.
Interesting.
But Bob Armstrong will also be aboard. He's one of the premier birders and authors, and I just got a new edition of his Birds of Alaska. It's a beautiful book. And Jan Straley is coming over from Sitka. She's started her work, actually, in Seymour Canal, and was just blown away by the number of whales that she saw. And she was in there with her husband one winter to do some bird work, and were just amazed at the amount of whales. And that started her on her career, she said, as a whale biologist. She said she has counted as many as 140 whales in there at one time, which is pretty amazing for the size of that inlet. And some biologists have said that that's probably the most productive winter waters in the state of Alaska. And it's fed by some currents and some kind of activity that no one really understands, but it's not, the whales are in there not necessarily because of fish, but because of krill.
Hmm.
And it may be that the whales' feeding stir up the krill. It may be that just the way the winds blow in there, the currents stir up the plankton, but it is just amazing. So we hope to see some whales and lots of birds. And John Straley, as I said, will also be aboard, and he's one of my favorite authors. And I just read Cold Storage Alaska, and it's such a delightful book because I thought, gee, I know so many of those people. I met them in my life, those different characters. So it should be a really fun cruise.
And in a sense, it's a fundraiser, but it's almost a prelude to a research project that you're going to do, right?
That's right. Because Seymour is so productive, and not everything obviously is known about it, so the proceeds from this cruise will help fund a symposium later this winter, early next year, where some scientists and people with local knowledge will get together and talk about what's known about the inlet, what research has been done, what research should be done. When you have a piece of productive water that's that amazing, it just cries out to find out why and to be sure that it's protected.
Absolutely. Speaking of that, you've been president of the board of Friends of Admiralty for a very long time. Tell us about when the group formed and why.
Well, we were formed in 1997 as a nonprofit to just be a public advocacy group for scientific and educational endeavors on the island. And kind of my history goes back to 1978 when I was appointed the first ranger on Admiralty when it was a national monument, and I just fell in love with the island and believe that it needs a public voice and it needs an advocacy group, and so that's what we hope we are. Whatever Congress has done, the work is working on their scale. And so, Don Shane was a well-known old growth of temperate rainforest in the world. And there's no other place that can have the scientific value like Admiralty, as well as the educational value, because it is so unique and it is an island that is pretty much intact.
So this cruise will be on Saturday, May 23rd, from 8:30 to 5:30, is that right?
That's correct.
And you'll be leaving from Auk Bay?
Right, and folks should bring a lunch, or you can buy food on board and drink on board. So.
And there's not a lot of tickets left, right?
That's right. We're getting down to probably 25 or so.
And where should folks get those?
Well, they can get them at Hearthside or over at the Jack.
Okay, and if somebody wants to learn more about Friends of Admiralty, how should they do that?
Well, they could call me at 586-6738.
Okay. What else should we talk about, KJ?
Well, we're doing a couple of things which I think are really exciting. One is we're doing a study in Hawk Inlet, and we're starting that study. It's a scientific study. It's starting at the end of this week, as a matter of fact. We have some scientists, a marine biologist, and a chemist, and the idea is to do some sampling. In 1981, there was a pre-mining study done to determine the health of the inlet, and there was a control area done in Young's Bay just on the other side. And so that 1981 study has never been duplicated, so we'd like to go in and duplicate at least some of those stations and see how much things have changed and what impact the mine is actually having on marine organisms and the health of the inlet.
And do you guys have a stance as Friends of the Admiralty on the mine?
Well, you know, we've been asked, well, you know, would this study be a prelude to trying to close the mine down? And that's never even been on the table as far as we're concerned. The mine is an important entity to the community of Juneau. Juneau really depends on those jobs, and those are good-paying jobs. I guess the point being that that mine is going to be there a long time, and there's going to be lots of tailings that come out of it. And we want to be sure that the process for the water that leaches down through those tailings and goes into the inlet is as good as possible. And the Forest Service and DEC, Department of Environmental Conservation, have said that those tailings need to be monitored and treated forever. And we say, well, that's a long time, and who's going to do that, and in what process will be used? So we want to be sure that the process is well understood, that it's working, and that there's a sufficient bond to cover the forever.
Sure. And you said you're going to be a third-party testing. Who will be doing the first and
second?
The
DEC has done some, and other agencies have done some. So whatever we find, we're going to invite the agencies and the public to take a look at. And we just want to be sure that in this new administration, they've promised that, in the state administration, that science will drive policy. And that hasn't always been the case. A lot of times policy drives science. And so we think this is a wonderful opportunity to do some good science. And if we're able to verify that everything is fine, I'll be as happy as I can be. But if there are some things that are a problem and they could be done better, then we really ought to work on that.
Okay. In the meantime, you can go on this cruise on May 23rd, Saturday, from 8:30 to 5:30, leaves Auk Bay.
That's right.
Tickets at the Jack or Hearthside. Anything else, KJ?
Well, we have a website that folks could check out. We have some current information on there. That's friends_ofAdmiralty. For the website, it's friends of Admiralty, all one word.
Okay. KJ Metcalf, thank you so much for
coming
in today.
Thank you, Scott. It's been a pleasure.
Okay.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Monday. It's the 11th of May, 2015, the birthday of Irving Berlin, born Israel Balin in Tumen, Russia, 1888. His father was a Jewish cantor, died when the boy was 8 years old. So the boy had to leave school, go to work, help support the family, sold newspapers, sang on the streets for handouts. He became a singing waiter in Chinatown. Published his first song, 1907. First big success, 1911, Alexander's Ragtime Band. And less than a decade later, he was writing complete musical scores and reviews, Broadway shows. Though he never learned to read or write music, only could compose in the key of F sharp. Nonetheless, he wrote Putting on the Ritz, and There's No Business Like Show Business, and God Bless America, and White Christmas. Fell in love with a debutante named Ellen Mackey in 1925. Her father disapproved, sent her off to Europe so she would forget this guy, but he wrote romantic ballads for her, like Always, and dedicated them to her, and she heard them on the radio. She came back to New York. They were married and stayed married for 62 years until she died in 1988. It's the birthday of the writer Mari Sandoz, born near Hay Springs, Nebraska, 1896. Her parents, immigrants. She spoke Swiss German, didn't know a word of English until she went off to school, but she taught herself English in the evenings. Finished eighth grade, she went off and became a teacher in a rural school. Ended up in an abusive marriage, got out of that, moved to Lincoln, where she took courses at the University of Nebraska. And then she heard that her father was dying, and she went back home to see him, though he had been very abusive to her in her childhood. His last wish was that she write the story of his life, and she did. It was called Old Jewels. It was published in 1935, became a Book of the Month Club selection, and it sold so well that she was able to support herself as a writer. She went on to write Crazy Horse, The Strange Man of the Oglalas, The Story Catcher, and many other books. And it was on this day in the year 868 A.D. that the Diamond Sutra was printed, the world's oldest book bearing a specific date of publication, a collection of Buddhist teachings printed with wood blocks on seven strips of paper that together form a scroll about 16 feet long. Here's a poem for today by Joe McDougall entitled Mothers and Daughters. When I was a child, my mother and I traveled the long miles to see her mother once a year. That hillside farm was mostly gravel. The kitchen smelled like a churn. Guineas and chickens strutted the porch. When we left, my grandmother would stand in her garden and wave. I'd watch her a long time, leaning out the window of the car. My mother would say little on the way home, her eyes now and then filling with tears. Perhaps she was thinking of that garden, the one she tried to replicate year after year, every last pole bean and zinnia, the one she left to me. Mothers and Daughters by Joe McDougall from In the Home of the Famous Dead, published by the University of Kansas Press and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by Lumosity.com, personalized brain training developed by neuroscientists to challenge memory and problem solving through online games, Lumosity.com, and by Progressive Insurance with its Apron Project, celebrating progress and the people who make it happen. Produced by Joy Biles, assisted by Kathy Roach. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
Support comes from Northern Audiology and Hearing Services, providing services for identification, evaluation, and rehabilitation for individuals with hearing difficulties. Located in the Jordan Creek Center. Information at 789-6780.
You're listening to a Juno Afternoon here on Monday, May 11th, 2015. It's about 20 minutes after the hour, and I've been joined in the studio now by James Hoagland. He's going to be telling us about some upcoming benefits for CEGLA and other events going into June. Welcome, James.
Thanks, John.
Nice to have you here today. So this first event is going to be on May 15th at the Gold Town, right? Wigging Out.
Yes. This Friday night, we're showing the amazing cult classic film, Hedwig and the Angry Inch, and it's a benefit for Juno Pride, and the organization that's planning Pride this year is called CEGLA, which is the Southeast Alaska Lesbian, Gay, Bisexual, and Transgender Alliance.
Okay. So that's this Friday night, and is Gigi Monroe going to be in the house?
Yes, you know, I tried to keep it a little under wraps, but Gigi will be in the house as Hedwig, so it's going to be a pretty amazing event.
I bet. And we, in case folks don't know you, we should give a little bit of background on Gigi and your business here in Juno and why this is indeed called Wigging Out.
Yes. Gigi Monroe is my drag queen alter ego, and she comes out once or twice a year usually. But for this event, it's like a must-have. Hedwig was actually the very first character that I ever did, and I did it for Halloween one year and then just got bit by the drag bug and kept going. And now I actually still make wigs for drag queens here in Juno. And actually, the queens are all over the world. I just make the wigs here in Juno. So we are also sponsoring the event and providing wigs for people to borrow to watch the film in. And we just want everyone to have a good time. And what's more fun than putting on a wig, drinking some beer from Alaskan Brewing Company, having some cupcakes, putting on some glitter, and watching Hedwig.
And these wigs are a big deal. Like, people order these from all around the world, as you said. How long does it usually take for you to make one?
It takes me anywhere from an hour to a couple hours, 2.5 hours.
Okay.
Yeah.
Do you enjoy the process?
I do. It's kind of meditative. It's obviously repetitious. So like any kind of artwork, you know, once you get into the mode of doing it, it's a creative outlet, but it's also very soothing.
Okay. And so this is a fundraiser for June Pride events. Tell us about the history of Pride events in this country.
So for those of you not familiar with Pride as a concept, it is something that commemorates the Stonewall riots, which happened in late June 1969. They were riots that happened in New York City, and it was in retaliation to police brutality and harassment of gay bars and the patrons of those bars in the Greenwich Village. So the patrons one day just, you know, got sick of it after repeated harassment and torment, and they decided to fight back. And they shut down the village for a number of days following this event. It was not just a one night thing, but it really it was the catalyst that the gay rights movement of that time really needed to propel it forward. And so the very first Gay Pride Day was celebrated in New York a year later on the anniversary of the Stonewall riots. And at that time, it was a march. It was a very political march. And the people who were brave enough to come out and march down the street in the Gay Pride Parade wore paper bags over their heads because it was still that dangerous to be out as a gay person, even in New York City. We've obviously come a long way since then in some ways, but we've got to remember that that history is only 45, 46 years old. That's not a long time ago. And we still, really honor those people who fought for our rights back then so that we can live a little bit easier life these days.
And what do Pride events in June look like here in Juneau?
Well, here in Juneau, we have a wide variety of events to honor our local LGBT community and to commemorate the riots. We have everything from a film festival at the Gold Town to a huge party at Rockwell Ballroom with RuPaul's Drag Race Season 5 favorite, Detox, who we're bringing up all the way from L.A. to entertain us. We've got a big kickball game. We've got a big picnic at Sandy Beach. We have a hike around the glacier, all kinds of things to really get people out, get them involved in their own community, and, you know, let them have fun and celebrate who they are.
Yeah, what's that time like for you?
Very busy. June is really, really busy for the LGBT community and for drag queens all around the world. It's a very busy time. We call it our high holiday. But it's great. It's just it's there to celebrate the contributions that people make every day in our community and to remember the history and to look forward to the future, to a world that is more and more and more accepting and tolerant and embracing of all people, regardless of their sexual orientation or their gender identity.
Okay. And to help support those events in June, you will be having this, you'll be the screening of Hedwig and the Angry Inch this Friday
at
9 p.m., right?
This is our only fundraiser for Juneau Pride. And so to keep all of those events in June free for everybody, we need people's support. Tickets are only $13, and we'll be selling beer and cupcakes and some more fun goodies that night. So
glitter
it's your
bar.
Chance. Yes. There will be a glitter bar, and that will be provided free of charge. So you can glitter up and get ready to hopefully sing along to Hedwig and the Angry Inch.
And you'll have wigs there that people can wear, right?
Yes. There will be a wig box. And it all starts at 9 o'clock on Friday night.
And Gigi Monroe will be there.
Yes.
Wow.
Remarkably, somehow she will be in the house.
It sounds like a lot of fun, James. Anything else you'd like to add?
I'd just like to thank our sponsors for that event. Like I said, Alaskan Brewing Company is donating beer for the event. Revelry Events, which is a new event production company here in Juneau, has donated some more beer and cupcakes, which we're really excited about. And Alaskan Dames has donated some artwork for us to offer as a fabulous prize to the most fabulously decked out audience member.
I bet for more information, go to Facebook, probably.
Yep. Check out Facebook, SEGLA.org. That's SEAGLA.org is our website, and that has all the information you can need. And you can get your tickets in advance on the Jack website or at Hearthside Books.
Well, we will see you or Gigi on Friday night at 9.
See you then.
Thanks, James.
Thanks.
This is Bird Note. On a fine May morning in Great Smoky Mountains National Park, a song issues from within a rhododendron thicket. But try as you may, you can't see the singer. It sounds like a warbler. Many breed in this lush mountain habitat. Black-throated blue warblers, for example. American redstarts. And hooded warblers. But no. It's a Swainson's warbler, one of North America's shyest birds. Small and brown, these birds forage quietly on the ground, flipping over leaves to expose and capture insects. They scurry away, calling an alarm when big-footed humans invade their shadowy habitat. They're amazingly good at disappearing in rapid flight through the tangled understory. On their wintering grounds, in the Blue Mountains of Jamaica, they're even harder to find because they don't sing in winter. There, instead, you might hear a rufous-throated solitaire singing in the dense mountain forest. Swainson's warblers do, however, respond aggressively to a recording of their own song. That's how ornithologists confirmed the presence of these elusive warblers and discovered a vital connection between the two mountain forests 1,000 miles apart. For BirdNote, I'm Mary McCann.
Time for the annual Community Day on campus at the University of Alaska Southeast. This year, featuring tours of the new on-campus freshman residence hall, free kayak, paddleboard, and boat rentals on Auk Lake, and the second annual elementary school art exhibit, plus face painting, food booths, carnival games, bouncy house, touch tank, and more. As always, music by local youth and community groups in the Egan Library. Saturday, May 16th, 11 a.m. to 4 p.m. on the UAS Auk Lake campus.
You're listening to a Juno Afternoon here on Monday, May 11th, 2015. Scott Burton, your host. It's about 30 minutes past the hour, and I'm going to play for you a little Bria Skonberg. She's going to be playing tonight at the Lucky Lady as part of the Jazz Jam at 7:30. Saw her play today down at the SOB. Really great performance. Very talented quintet.
Oh, yeah. this station comes from Alaska Canopy Tours, offering canopy and zipline tours. More information at alaskacanopy.com.
You're listening to a Juno Afternoon here on Monday, May 11th, 2015. It's about 20 minutes till the top of the hour. Scott Burton, your host, and I've been joined now in the studio by Mr. Bill Leedy. Welcome, Bill.
Well, thank you. Glad to be here.
Thank you for coming in out of the sun. I bet you walked or rode your bike here.
I biked down, and I will be biking out to buy a couple of mouse traps for my sister's birthday present. Don't ask me why.
Okay, I won't. So you're going to be giving, you're going to be the featured speaker for JWAC, Juno World Affairs Council, tomorrow, Tuesday at 5 p.m. here at 360. Is that correct?
Right.
Okay. And Arresting Climate Change.
Yes.
That's your title of your talk.
We have to be very careful with our language. Indeed. By arresting, I mean to slow it, to help us get control of our energy situation. We're not going to stop climate change by anything we can do in the short term or the medium term. We've got to be the trim tab on the rudder to turn the ship of the world's largest industry, which is energy. Now, about 85% fossil fuel. Our goal has to be to run the ship on 100% renewables.
And why not?
The only source of income our little spaceship Earth has is radiant energy from the sun. So we have to learn to live on income. Otherwise, we're spending our capital.
Bill, tell us about your history a little bit. Tell us about the Leedy Foundation and why this has sort of been your life's passion.
Yes. Well, I'm an electrical engineer and MBA by training. And back when we sold the Gold Creek Salmon Bake in 1990 and put the money from that into a new company called Alaska Applied Sciences, Inc., we were just beginning to be interested in the energy problem. Where are we going to get our energy? Are we going to run out of oil, peak oil? And what about climate change? It was just beginning to come on the radar at that time. So my wife, Nancy, and I agreed to put the capital from the Salmon Bake into a new company, Alaska Applied Sciences, Inc. We bought a wind plant, or the wind turbines by which to make a wind plant down in Palm Springs. For the last 20 years, we've been delivering energy made from the wind to the Southern California Edison grid. And now we're in the process of transforming that 13-turbine wind plant to make all of its electric energy converted to hydrogen fuel for the coming hydrogen-fueled buses, fuel cell buses, and cars. So that really suits me as a hands-on engineering kind of guy. The Leedy Foundation was founded by my father in 1985. Yet he and a partner had a small manufacturing company in Waterloo, Iowa, where I grew up, and he decided to put some of the earnings from that company into a small charitable family foundation.
And was he also focused on renewable energy and efficiency?
No, not particularly, although the product that their company made, that made all the money that went into the family foundation, the filter minder, is a very environmentally important product. It keeps people from changing the air cleaner element on their internal combustion engines, mostly trucks and large equipment like that, prematurely. A lot of people throw their air cleaner element away when it looks dirty or 12,000 miles or something like that. Those big Class 8 trucks that go down the highway, dump trucks, the air cleaner costs $200. They'll go 300,000 miles if you just have a gauge on there that tells you when the thing's starting to get dirty, so you better change it. So his company was a very green company.
Interesting.
And the foundation has a program called Earth Protection. We used to call it science and environment, but environment's kind of an ambiguous term. So earth protection is really what we want to accomplish. And through energy, conservation and efficiency is the most important thing to do first. If you had a dollar to spend on saving the world, solving the world's energy problem, spend it on conservation and efficiency first, and then go out and buy some PV panels.
And speaking of PV panels and creating hydrogen from electricity in your wind plant down south, you're actually going to be doing some demonstrations as part of your talk tomorrow. Some hands-on stuff, right?
If you come tomorrow, you will see a little tabletop hydrogen demonstrator, which will make hydrogen fuel from a PV panel, and maybe we'll stick it out the door so the sunshine will...
PV, what's that?
Photovoltaic. It means it makes electricity from the sun. So it'll run in sunlight, and it'll make hydrogen, and the hydrogen goes over to a little fuel cell. The fuel cell makes DC electricity and spins a little motor and a little airplane propeller. Complete renewable hydrogen demonstration system. If you scaled that up to megawatt or multi-megawatt scale, you could make a big difference.
Well, this is going to be a lot of fun. It's tomorrow downstairs at 5 p.m. at 360, at, like all JWAC events. It's free to the public. Bill, I have a question for you. What does a perfect Juno look like for you in 5, 10, 15, 20 years? What does our energy paradigm, if you could just design it, what would it look like?
Well, it's a very interesting time. It's always an interesting time, I guess. Some people remember that for 30 years I've been waving my arms about Juno is a linear community. It would be ideal for a fixed guideway, electric-powered, hydroelectric-powered transit system. Call it light rail or streetcar or busway, something like that. So that we could save every family unit $8,000 a year in after-tax income by not owning that second or third car. We're such an automotive society, and of course, Juno just replicates that. But we have the opportunity to save a lot of the 10 million gallons of gasoline that we burn every year in this town just driving our cars around if we rode the electric transit. And now, out at the Glacier Visitor Center, John Neary wants to make that into a climate change education center because this demonstration is right in front of our eyes, the shrinking glacier, and have electric-powered trams out there. Of course, John will have to tell you the complete story there. Meantime, downtown, we've got the 16B docks coming, Panamax-sized cruise ships, so thousands of people getting off into an area that's already over-congested with diesel-powered, belching, noisy buses. So the other end of the dumbbell could be an electric-powered transit system. Let's tie them together and have the cruise ship companies buy our electric-powered tram or light rail or a streetcar system for us.
Okay.
That's my Juno of the future.
I could sit here and ask you questions. I wish we had a bunch more time. A couple highlights for us, though, before we go. What can a few of our listeners start to do better to help arrest climate change? What are some very practical tips for Junoites that we could start today?
Well, I'm going to hop on my bike. Let's all bike more, although we know it's a miserable climate stuff to do a lot of the year. The simplest thing we can do is agree, make a promise to ourselves to never consume or buy bottled water. That's the simplest thing we can do to save energy, material, the planet, if you want to put it that way. We've gotten into some bad habits.
Okay. And I bet you're going to talk more about this. It's all going to be part of his presentation tomorrow, 5 p.m. at 360. Bill, always a pleasure talking to you. Are we missing anything? Anything you want to add?
Well, the subtitle is Transforming the World's Largest Industry, which is energy. And we are an oil and gas state. We live by the revenue that comes from oil and gas. But we have far greater resources, renewable resources, diverse, wind and wave and tidal and geothermal, but they're stranded. There's no way to get them to market, except that the Japanese are interested now in importing into Japan green, that is carbon emission free hydrogen for fuel from renewable resources. And if you were in Japan and you looked out at the world, you see Russia and Sakhalin Island and Korea, and then you see the Aleutians and Alaska. We're right next door to Japan. And they're developing floating wind turbines. If we had thousands or tens of thousands of floating wind turbines in the Aleutians, making hydrogen to go into tankers, to go to Japan, that'd make us more money than oil and gas ever will.
Well, this talk's going to be interesting tomorrow. 5:30, is that right? Or is it 5 o'clock?
5
o'clock downstairs.
5 tomorrow, Tuesday.
Looking forward to it, Bill Leedy. Thank you so much for your time.
Thanks. Thanks, Scott.
Started out all alone. sun went down. As I crossed the hill and the town lit up, the world got still. I'm learning to fly, but I ain't got wings. Coming down is the hardest thing. Well, the good old days may not return, and the rocks might melt, and the seed may burn. I'm learning to fly, but I ain't got wings. Coming down is the hardest thing. You down and break your heart, steal your crown. So I started out for God knows where. I guess I'll know when I get there. Around the clouds, but what goes up must come down.
Raven Correspondence School is a quality statewide K-12 homeschool program and is currently taking enrollment for the 2015-2016 school year. With Raven Correspondence, students will have a wide variety of curriculum choices with certified teacher support as well as easy access to local resources and activities. For enrollment information, visit ravenschool.com or call 888-99-RAVEN. This message is brought to you by Raven Correspondence School. There's no place like home.
It's about 10 minutes till the top of the hour. You're listening to a Juno Afternoon here on Monday, May 11th, 2015. Scott Burton, your host, and I have been joined by some aerial artists here in the studio. You can't see it. Listeners, they are suspended by ropes and other stuff. Sylvia Kwan, Sarah Gehring, and Crystal Worrell, welcome to the studio and the
Thank
show.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Yeah. Andromeda. / Sylvia Kwan. I was just saying, Sylvia, you may know her if you've seen Seven Homeless
Mammoths Wander New England.
Okay. So you may recognize that voice. But you're also an aerial artist. You live in L.A.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And you guys practice at the Rock Dump. Tell us about it. How'd you meet? How'd this all come to be?
Well, I started doing aerial arts in Los Angeles, like you said, and I wanted a place to train in when I came to Juneau. So I contacted the Rock Dump, and through the owner, Olji, he put me in contact with Sarah. And then I was around town, and I got put in contact with Crystal as well. And so we all started training together at the Rock Dump.
We all just started texting each other before we'd actually ever met each other.
Yeah. We were all strangers. We had never met each other in person. But the love of aerial brought us together.
And can you give us sort of a visual, something that we were talking about earlier was sort of this Cirque du Soleil-esque style of aerial artistry. Can you give us some more pictures for our listeners to put in their heads?
Yeah, so aerial dance is much like Cirque du Soleil. They actually do fabric and silks. There's many different names for it. You're climbing the silks. There's two of them, and you can wrap your body into them, and you can do drops into other wraps and unravel. So there's a lot of climbing. Typically, a single performance will go 3 to 7 minutes, if you can imagine that. And there's three of us doing an hour show. So it's pretty extensive, and we've been training really hard for this, about 3 hours every day, and it's going to be really fantastic.
And we're going to have aerial silks and a lira, which is a small hoop that you put your body in.
Sarah, how did you get into aerial arts?
My wonderful friend Melissa talked me into it and then kind of just gave me her silks. And then I met Sylvia and got thrown into this crazy group. So it's been pretty recent for me.
Crystal, how about you? Because you're also a visual artist, I know, mm-hmm. Among other things.
I have been doing ballet I've done it about almost 5 years. And then I went to college, so I took a break from dance. I got my bachelor's degree in fine arts. And as soon as I finished college, I knew I wanted to just focus on aerial arts. When I finished, I've been studying it for about a year and a half now. I've studied at the Circus Center in San Francisco, at Emerald City Trapeze Arts in Seattle, and then also in L.A. and New Mexico. And now here in Juneau, I was looking for people to train with in a community, and my friend Christy Erickson told me there was this girl named Sylvia, and through Sylvia I met Sarah, and we kind of got together, and we're like, hey, let's do a show.
Yeah.
That's kind of how it happened.
And when, every day when you're practicing at the rock dump, what's it look like? There's climbers in there, and then are you all in the middle, like on silks and liras? Like, how does that look?
Well, we actually go during off hours, okay. So there's no conflict of interest, bodies flying everywhere. Yeah.
Plus, we're using their top ropes. So.
Yeah, we're using the ropes, so we're...
But Oljay has been incredibly gracious in letting us train basically whenever we want, whenever works for him. So we just want to give him a big thank you for how awesome he's been.
What is the danger factor? Is it as high as one might think, or have you practiced so much that it's very safe?
I think we're relatively safe. Sarah is a stickler on safety in terms of the rigging, so she always double-checks everything there. And we have crash pads just in case, but I think we're all pretty aware and cautious whenever we try new moves. You know, we'll try them slowly or not as high. And then when we get more comfortable, then we'll go really high and go for it.
I've also trained at schools for professionals, and so we are very, sticklers about taking care of your joints and stretching and conditioning before and after. And I've been helping these girls learn how to condition and protect their joints for safety in the long run. And then also we watch each other. We never train alone. We do it together. We're a team, and we always spot each other if necessary. So we train as professionals.
Sure, sure. Well, to see this in person, this is Wednesday at the Rock Dump?
Yes.
7 p.m.
Okay, and it's a fundraiser for the Rock Dump, is that right?
Yes, yes.
We're going to have a raffle?
Yes, there are going to be different raffle prizes. Items. There's going to be tickets for the show Seven Homeless Mammoths Wander New England at the Perseverance Theater. So those are pretty nice prizes.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Great. Play. Okay. 7 o'clock?
7 o'clock.
Wednesday. For more information, maybe go to Rock Dump Facebook or something.
The Queens of Heavens is on Facebook as an event. Okay. Check
Very
us out and join. Please come.
Queens of Heavens?
Yeah.
All right.
Yep.
Well, thank you very much, Crystal Whirl, Sarah Gehring, and Sylvia Kwan, for coming into the studio. Are we missing anything?
That's about it.
Good. Yeah, thank you so much
welcome.
For having us.
Here's
thank you.
A little more Bria Skonberg. and into a Juno afternoon today. Tune in same time, same place tomorrow. I'll be your host. We'll get a preview of the Wednesday night program of Mudrooms, an update on Perseverance Theater's current production of Seven Homeless Mammoths Wander New England. We'll visit with Cinnamon Simpson and some young actors from the upcoming Montessori Borealis production of The Canterbury Tales. And we'll profile the music of Juno Jazz and Classics performer Windsink. And we'll learn about upcoming graduation events as well right here on a Juno afternoon. Currently 59 degrees at the Juno Airport.